This hour, I just wanted to deal with some observations. The first one, I want to begin by giving you a mental quiz. What do Jerry Jenkins, MP, Wendell, and Dan Winkler, Roy Lanier Sr., Gus Nichols, Bobby Key, Frank Chesser, Cliff Lyons, David Jones, Harold Turner, Glenn Wilcutt, Bobby Liddell, Curtis Cates, Thomas B. Warren, Roy Lanier, Roy Deaver, Phil Jenkins, and Denny Petrillo, and many, many men have in common.
What are you trying to do?
They all have sons who are preachers. Many of them have been involved in preacher training. Those men are like my father, have a son or sons who have followed in their example and have been doing local work as a preacher in the last quarter century or so. Added to that list is a lengthy list of men whose daughters have married preachers and who have lived and who have chosen to live and that unique kind of home where they grew up. You know, for me it was a privilege and a joy being raised in a preaching home. We moved several times throughout the years. I watched my father receive unfair treatment from others. I saw him punched and pinched. One guy who, when he was preaching on modern dancing, was on the back row, stood up, shook his fist, and began to do that at my dad. He's now a gospel preacher. I saw my father face some severe discouragement and burnout. We even experienced some financial hardships through the years. But despite this, from an early age, I grew to love the life of preaching. My dad took me to the building to teach me elementary Greek. The first Greek word I learned was ekklesia. He drew it up on the board. I remember being helped by my dad to write my first sermons. I remember him allowing me to go to the building while he taped his radio programs. I remember getting spanked one time because I didn't have the concept put together that live radio and a closed door meant that I couldn't go up and pound on it and ask my dad to help me find a toy. And my dad said something about audio difficulties and went out the door and addressed the audio difficulty very hard and then went back inside. I remember being there for my dad in sermon preparation and just sitting across and watching my dad as he engaged in Bible study. I don't remember how many Bible studies I went with my dad on, but I recall that I had a very important job. Back in the technologically advanced age in which you put that Jewel Miller film strip in the case and then you had the portable record player, you know. And then I would go and when I heard the ding, I would advance the slide. You know, I even got to set up the record player sometimes. I remember, for some reason, as I was thinking about this last night, I remember the Stevie family. My dad had preached several of his years in military towns. And my dad was, well, we were not necessarily the most affluent members of the congregation. But I remember going with him to the grocery store as he bought several bags of groceries for the Stevie family, going out to their trailer and giving it to them. Often I didn't appreciate the special world that he brought me into. Honestly, at times I was bored hanging out at the building. And yet I kept those precious memories with me to this very hour. I don't think one has to be a preacher's son in order to preach. I think the opposite of that. But I have learned some great lessons as a second generation preacher. I'm just going to go over these very briefly with you. I think it's very important. And if you've never had it, if your father never preached a day in your life, I think these will still be things that are valuable to you. Number one, the blessings outweigh the difficulties. For whatever headaches that only preachers endure that nobody else understands, there's a multitude of spiritual perks that accompany this wonderful life. As I think about the blessings and how they outweigh the difficulties, you get to devote yourself full time to doing God's work. You have additional time to study the unfathomable riches of the gospel, Ephesians 3 and verse 8. You get to make an eternal impact on the lives of your brothers and sisters, not only through preaching, but through visiting and through fellowship and counseling. These efforts may be occasionally a burden to you, and you may see them that way, but the payoff in those is tremendous. The blessings outweigh the difficulties. But number two, I've learned that no one is immune to discouragement or from discouragement. Gospel preachers in Bible times suffered from discouragement. We've preached about them. We've talked about them. But review them. Think about Elijah. Elijah faced great discouragement. In 1 Kings 19 and verse 10, he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They have thrown down your altars and have killed your prophets with the sword." I'm having a hard time imagining what that would be like. We have 35 congregations on the Front Range in Denver. To hear that 34 of them have been killed in the line of duty in preaching. How'd you feel? Discouragement would be one word. He was discouraged. He said, "I'm the only one left." We know he was wrong, but that's how he felt.
Yeah.
What about David in Psalm 142 and verse 4? "No one cared for my soul." Solomon the preacher in Ecclesiastes, he said everything's worthless, it's meaningless, it's vanity. Ecclesiastes 1, 2, and several other places in the book. And Paul did. Boy, listen to Paul at the last letter, so far as we know, that he wrote. 2 Timothy 4, verse 16. "At my first defense, no one stood by me. All men deserted me. I pray God it would not be held against them." Fuller Institute did a study of preachers. It's included in John Maxwell's book, Partners in Prayer. I found this very notable. In this survey, it was said, in the survey of preachers, 80% believe that their ministry has affected their families negatively. 33% say that being in the ministry is an outright hazard to their family. 75% report a significant stress-related crisis at least once in their ministry. 50% feel unable to meet the needs of the job. 90% feel that they were inadequately trained to cope with ministry demands. I don't know, I've ever talked to a preacher who didn't say, "They didn't teach us how to do that in school." 70% say they have a lower self-image than when they started in ministry. 40% report a serious conflict with, in this study you'll understand the terminology, a parishioner, a member, at least once a month. 70% do not have someone that they consider a close friend. When I first saw that survey, you know what my first reaction was? Wrong. It was a wrong reaction. You know, I thought about what I've been told. You need to have thick skin. What sissies. Boy, they, you know, how short-sighted. But you know what a lot of these guys are reflecting? A reality of anything that we do. Preaching is no exception. There are times when you're going to be discouraged. There are times when things that are happening that are tangible, that you can put your finger on, that are going on, that get you discouraged. Interpersonal problems, doctrinal problems, moral problems, attitude problems. But sometimes you're going to get discouraged, and there's no good reason why. It's just part of the psyche. It's just part of the cycle of life. Maybe it's where you are in that work. Maybe it's where you are in life. But you're going to be discouraged sometimes. One thing, you remember that Brother Luther said, never make a big decision on a blue day. Oh, how valuable that is. Realize, discouragement will come. Be prepared for it. But you know, we need to understand that if you were a bricklayer, if you were an accountant or a doctor, there'll be times when you'd be discouraged. Without no offense to any other profession, without the perks that come along with preaching. There'll be times when there's the temptation to give up, to move on, and to cave in. There's going to be unfair and unrealistic expectations. You're not only going to see the best of your brethren, but you're going to also see the worst of your brethren. At times, you're going to find yourself standing all alone. The late Hugo McClurg once told now the late Earl West, the church historian and searcher of the ancient order, this very profound statement: "People will not always agree with your preaching." That's deep, isn't it? but it discourages you. It's a reality that stings, isn't it? But you know you studied. You put a lot of work into that, and you know it's needed. You preach it, and people don't buy it. Or they don't follow it. Maybe don't even agree with it. And yet every down day and every excruciating experience is more than offset by the overwhelming encouragement that comes simply from serving the Lord as the preacher of the gospel. For every criticism, there's usually 10 times the praise if you're tuned to listen to it.
Right.
For every heartache, there's a feeling of deep, settled peace that you feel when you pillow your head at night. Blue days, blue weeks, blue months may come. Be prepared. A third thing I've learned is that preachers can and should be normal men. Every time I ever talk about being normal, and especially when talking to preachers, that's a very humorous idea. What does normal mean? My normal and your normal may be two different things. Because no offense to you guys in the room, if you spend 10 hours a day playing videos, I don't think you're normal. If your idea of a great vacation is going to Disneyland, I don't think you're normal. I like to get out there in the nature. But I'm not talking about that. Let me talk about my dad for a moment. He's still with us. He preaches the gospel in North Carolina. My dad played football and basketball and ran track in high school. One of my proudest things was to show everybody my dad. My dad, and some of you guys know my dad, has an off yellow tooth in the front. You know why it's off yellow? Because he was playing football and it got knocked out. The tooth did. And they took a few minutes on the field trying to find the tooth. They went over and they put it on ice and washed it, and for about a quarter my dad was, because he played back in the early 60s when it had those face masks on the front. Stuck that tooth back up into his head. As far as I know, that's all that happened. That was 50 years ago. He still got that tooth. But he got from playing football and he said, "I laid him out."
Yes, sir.
He played ball with me and he watched me play. He took me fishing and hunting. He laughed at my jokes and goofiness with a genuine enthusiasm I didn't deserve. He took days off to be with his family. He always took us on vacation. He only knew of one place in the world. It was Cherokee, North Carolina. And you know, that bugged me at the time. You know, we'd see under these hills, and we would go to Maggie Valley, and every year the same thing over and over. But at least he took his vacation. And he always left his work behind. My dad's a hard worker, but he left it behind. My dad had a garden. My dad sang. It was always funny. We would joke, the kids, as he was going down the road, if it was a country song or if it was a church song, he would sing and he'd forget half the words. You know, and that was just a great, you know what's happened? You know, you reap what you sow. If you make fun of your dad, I'll be doing it and I'll forget the words, and my boys are merciless. He went to PTA meetings, and in these things he left an example to me. I never heard my dad use the term fishbowl family. I never thought of our family as living in a glass house. You see, he emphasized the need to be normal. And preachers, we need to allow our children to be normal.
Amen.
They must see that in our lives. We need to take the time to play with them. Do things with them. Love your wife. Be involved in your community. Fellowship with the church and connect with them. Speak highly of the church. Be very careful not to speak negatively about the church in front of your children, especially when they're younger. Allow your children to be imperfect. Don't let them run wild, but understand that they're just children. They're just humans, same as anybody else. Spend time with your family. And not only will that help them emotionally and spiritually to be healthy, but it'll do the same thing for you.
Right.
So often we put so much pressure on ourselves that nobody else has. We think that we're trying to live up to certain expectations. Now, you know, if you know me, I know that we need to be an example. We need to make sure that we're setting the tone. But in that, have a normal family life. But then also I've learned that God will provide. I experienced Psalm 37 and verse 25 in a preacher's home. And like David, I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his descendants begging bread. He provides material for us. You know, we may feel like there are many around us who have more. But if we are honest about it and we understand where we live in this world and in history, God has provided richly for us. He also provides opportunities to change lives through our preaching. Where else could we make as deep an impact on the lives of others? He further provides a harvest as you plant the seed. He provides relief from the burdens that you bear through the kindnesses of others, through a loving family, through answered prayers, through the promises of His Word. I saw this growing up, the son of a preacher, and I continue to see it to this day, and I pray that my children are seeing the same thing in me. Well, I don't know how much time I have, but let me move on to something else. I want to make some observations about preaching. This is going to be, I think there's 25 of these. Observation number one. This, I hope, will help you in preaching. Number one, love your older members. In other words, I didn't say try to or learn to. Love your older members in the congregation. Will you understand with me that they are your best supporters and your number one fans?
Amen.
You serve a multi-generational church. Not just the church of your peers, or even the church of those who are younger than you. What does 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2 say? How we're supposed to treat the older men as fathers, the older women as mothers, the younger men as brothers, the younger women as sisters with all purity? We need to understand that in that congregation are those older. 1 Peter 5 and verse 5, you younger, submit yourselves unto the older. Oh, how often we buy into the cultural lie that the elderly are to be discarded. Don't fall into that trap. Love your older members. Number two, be a people person. We mentioned that in the last hour. It does not matter if you are an introvert. Successful preaching is about much more than preparing a Bible class and sermon. It is all about people. You've got to get outside of yourself. I want to tell you, he's not here. I think he's been here before. The Warrens family were here. They had to go on. Their oldest daughter, their second in line. By the way, we should have them ordained because I think they have 10 children from yesterday's, from Glenn's lesson. But Alicia married Garrett Bookouter. He's a graduate of our school. We started an intern program, and he was our first charge. That guy worked so hard. He was a great preacher. He learned to preach without notes far before many guys. And he was, whatever you asked him to do, he would do it. But he struggled with working with people. But you know what? He understood how important it was. He's the preacher for the 16th and Pyle. Is that the name of the congregation? Clovis, New Mexico? Doing a wonderful job. We've got to overcome what. And if anybody could say I'm shy, it was Garrett. And if he overcame it, so can we. Number three, choose what you preach and how you preach it with forethought, carefulness, and tact. Then we talk about discouragement. You know what can happen in discouragement? Especially if you're discouraged by a particular problem in a congregation? Is all your sermons are going to be about that problem. And you're going to, it's all you think about. It's all you talk about. And it's going to show up. And you know what? You're not very tactful. You're not very careful. And you're not going to be very effective. People are going to learn to tune you out after about the third or fourth sermon. And they're going to know that there are things going on with you. Be very careful. Let's say that there's an episode, a doctrinal or a moral issue comes up, and it occurs. What are you going to do? Are you going to preach about it the next Sunday? No, let it sit for a while and come back to it. Be careful. Don't be reactionary. Be wiser. Number four, don't be a hobby horse rider. Some men cannot avoid issue orientation. I know a man who has taken up controversy for his 40-plus years of preaching. And he has chosen to die on several molehills. Don't let others, even older preachers, push you into championing their causes. It's interesting to me how 1 Timothy begins and ends. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 6, avoid fruitless discussions. Well, what happens if you don't? Those who do not avoid fruitless discussions have, listen, strayed from love, pure heart, a good conscience, and faith. They're not strong. They've departed from the end of the book. Those who engage in such are involved in worldly and empty chatter. The word worldly is enough for me. The way sometimes the tactics are worldly, but what's characteristic of them? They have gone astray from the faith. Incidentally, what's a hobby? It's what everybody else does, right? Good things can become hobbies. Baptism can become a hobby. Evangelism can become a hobby. Whatever we become a one-note Charlie about can be a hobby. Get off of it. Number 5, have the courage to preach the whole counsel, including the difficult. May I say this, if you prove to the brethren that you genuinely care about them and you love them, and you take the time to be involved in their lives, when there's sicknesses, when there's births, when there's deaths, when there are family events, by being hospitable, they will endure the most difficult subjects that you have to preach. Some of them are very difficult, but isn't it easier if they know that you love them? But you can't avoid anything. You ever perhaps found yourself in a situation, obviously you don't listen to the talk about the former preacher, but perhaps just reputation, influence, and the passage of time indicates that that was a man who would not ever preach anything that was error, but there were a great many things that he needed to preach that he didn't preach. It's difficult to fill the pulpit in the wake of such an experience, but you've got to preach, even the difficult. Number 6, assume that elders are your friends. Build close relationships with them. I know this has already been covered in other places, but let me just say this. Praise them publicly and privately and frequently. Even if you have to strongly encourage them to do something that is already their responsibility to do, but they might not want to do. As often as you can, try to deflect praise that's given to you. You know, you're the front man. You hear it a lot. Deflect it onto them. And make sure that the church knows how much you love and appreciate them. Number 7, be patient with your brethren. It takes time for them to come around. What's being overly frustrated, blowing your top? If they are slow to be involved in evangelism or local church programs or needed moral changes, you know, sometimes that's difficult. I remember we were having an evangelism campaign. We called it a door-hanging campaign. This was in Virginia. And it was called a saturation campaign. You have to face anybody. All you have to do is hang a piece of cool plastic with a tract, an invitation, or a brochure of the congregation on the door. And I got up on Sunday morning. We've been advertising that a lot. And I got up and I said, as I looked, we had two sections in the auditorium there. And I said, I estimated the number of the crowd. I said, I know some of you are unavoidably detained this afternoon, but I have confidence in you. I'm smiling, I'm beaming, that half of you will be there. And I meant it. I was sincere. And the way the building was constructed, we were going to meet downstairs. And from the upstairs, I could see the parking lot. It was at 2 o'clock. So I remember about 1:50, I went upstairs. And I was looking out of the windows out at the parking lot. We had 12 people. Well, what do you do with that? You know, I felt low. I felt ineffective. I felt unheard. I felt rejected. But you know who we had in that 12? 3 people who had never done it before. What are you going to focus on? Yeah. You hear what I'm saying tonight and say, you bunch of sorry people, why weren't you there? This, and have we all felt that before? You can't do that. It won't work. Don't wear your discouragement on your sleeve. Be patient. It takes time. You know what happens in the process of time? If you don't react to that wrongly, more people will come. How do you look at victory? Is it winning the whole church over in a year? Or is it a few families at a time? That's realistically, that's how it works. Number 8, be well-rounded and well-informed. Paul is a great example of this. We see what he did up on Mars Hill. We see how he was brought up in a cosmopolitan town with good education. Always be trying to grow in those regards. Number 9, push yourself to be where you need to be. I don't know what it is, but I know you have weaknesses in your preaching life. Wherever it is, work on it. It may be in your preaching. It may be in your visiting, in your counseling, in the way you teach Bible classes. Several things that we need to be stronger on. Focus on them. Work on them. Make your liability an asset. Balance your work where you may be negligent. I know at Southwest, Rick, that I have the preacher's daily schedule and the different expectations that go along with that. That's a good way to be able to gauge where you need to grow. You know, how did I spend my last week? Write it down, and you'll see where you need to grow. Number 10, You cannot compromise the truth to curry favor with members, be they wealthy, powerful, or influential. John the Baptist didn't do that with Herod. Paul didn't do that with Felix. Jesus didn't do it with the religious establishment of the day. But also, number 11, be an active encourager. Notice the little things that people do. Notice the sacrifices that they make. Notice the good works that they perform behind the scenes. Write an article about the silent soldiers. Talk about something, not to be obsequious or to flatter somebody. But when you see somebody do something good that maybe nobody else has done, they didn't do for praise. What kind of power do you have as you're kicking off a service or at the beginning of a sermon as an illustration to a point to call them by name and say what they did? Amen. It might be the wind that just fills their sails all the way to heaven. Write notes out of the blue for no particular reason. Call them. Email them. Praise them from the pulpit. Number 12, pray for your brethren by name. You have problems with somebody where you're preaching? Pray for them. Paul is a great example of this. Ephesians 1:16. I do not cease giving thanks for you while making mention of you in my prayers. 1 Thessalonians 1:2. We give thanks to God always for all of you, making mention of you in my prayers. Philemon 4. I thank my God always, making mention of you in my prayers. You know your prayer life, I don't. Are your brethren by name in your prayer life? The sister who's the grammar police that comes up to you? The brother who only says something to you if you said something that he didn't agree with? Pray for him. Number 13. Be a source of peace, harmony, and unity in the local church and in the brotherhood. Be a source of harmony. I'm not saying compromise. I'm saying understand the biblical emphasis on unity. Yes. Number 14, stay away from church gossip and actively work to fight it. Don't join in negative talk about brethren, about the former preacher, about other preachers, about elders. You've heard, haven't you? If you have, I'll move on because I don't have much time. But the preacher had the black book. And the folks would come into his office and they would be about to tell something on somebody else. And he would say, wait a minute, hold on. And he would pull the book down and say, I want to write it down exactly as you said it. And when you're done, I want you to sign your name to it. He said in over 50 years of preaching, he never had a single entry in the book. Why? I don't want my name on it, but I want to say it. How many of us as preachers would get in trouble if our names were signed to some of what we said? In the local work. Number 15, put the best possible construction on the actions of others toward you. Put the best construction on people's actions toward you. Don't assume bad motives. Don't assume ill will in their words or their actions. Consider what extenuating circumstances might have led them to say or do that. Number 16, do not let grudge bearing or bitterness take root in your heart. They are deadly to effective ministry and local work, and they are spiritually harmful to you. You know what Paul says in Ephesians 4? How much time have we given to the attribute of bitterness? What does bitterness look like to you? Isn't it somebody with gritting teeth who are just seething? You ever seen that? But it happens to preachers. Don't get bitter. What is that he always said? Get better. Not bitter. Number 17, work fervently and daily on your personal relationship with God. Do not let personal devotional time suffer or be neglected. What's the content of your heart as it can create a gap between you and God, and be mindful of His omnipresence at all times. That'll help you. You should be much closer to God today than you were several years ago. Number 18, don't fall into the trap of comparing yourself with other preachers. You know, I have never, ever listened to, even when some guys have tried to tell me what they made, their salary. I don't want to know. That's between you and the church where you are. Probably all of us are way overpaid. Well, I'm surprised I heard even one. Who was it? Anyway. Are you fixing to leave there? I'm just kidding. Don't be concerned with the attention and the opportunities that they receive. Do not be concerned with your perceived superiority or inferiority with them. Paul said, in a different context, of course, but 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12, we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some, those who commend themselves, but they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves. They are without understanding. Certainly that's true if we fall into that little game. Number 19, seek out wise counselors and preaching mentors, older preachers. They want you to succeed. Guys, if you're older preachers, and I know you might not think of yourself that way, if you've been preaching for a while, invest in younger preachers. They need the experience that you've gained. You know who's one of the best of that? I don't want to embarrass him, but he's in this room. Mike Bestel. He is an encourager of young preachers. You know, my boys, I want to preach. I'd like to think I have something to do with that, but he's had something to do with it. My son's toting around a Bible that Mike gave him. I've given him two. But I'm glad. I'm glad. Because somebody's encouraging them. Find somebody. They need you. Number 20. Never stop studying. What happened to the clock there? I've been trying to go off of. Okay. I'm almost done. Never stop studying. Keep yourself fresh, vital, and informed. You're never there. Okay. Number 21. Keep abreast of current events. What's going on in your world? That's helpful to know. Don't be obsessed with it. Don't overdo it. But you know it's helpful. There's nothing wrong with you in moderation, keeping up with the NBA playoffs or with Major League Baseball or football or, if you have to, NASCAR or whatever it is. It might be helpful. Don't be political activists. It's a mistake we make often. We close some doors. But it would be helpful if you knew who the candidates for each party were. Why? Because each of these provide opportunities, open doors, with the lost and with your brethren. Number 22, as I've already said, I won't say much about this, have as a goal to always be in a Bible study with someone. We must break out of the mold of conceiving of ourselves as the office administrator. We are evangelists. Read 2 Timothy 4, 1 through 8. Number 23, find ways to be involved in encouraging others to preach the gospel. Who knows where we're going to find the preachers of tomorrow? In some unlikely places. I can remember men who held gospel meetings in the congregations where I grew up expressing their confidence in me that I could become a preacher. We're involved in future preacher training camp. You know, I thought, you would think, being in a school of preaching, well, how am I going to have the greatest impact? And I think we are having an influence there. But having those 13 to 18 year olds there all week long, I don't know how many preachers we've made just by coming together and they seeing us. When we sit there in the evening and we have our shoes off and our socks have holes in them, you know, we got our feet propped up. That's the preacher? Because they can see that guy as the guy, you know, as we've always joked about, it's been around for a long time, the preacher out there mowing his grass in his suit. That's what some little boys think that we are. We get out there and we play ball and we foul them just a little too hard, but we apologize. They know that we're real people. Number 24, find hobbies and interests, but don't abuse them. If you're playing video games 10 hours a day, not only are you not normal, you're abusing what can be a very healthy outlet, as long as the game content is what it should be. Find hobbies and interests. Some guys, their only hobby is stress and worry. Find better hobbies than that. Finally, be willing to stand up for Christ, even if you have to stand alone. And if you stand up for Christ, you're never alone. You know, every day brings new opportunities to learn. Will you be an observer of life and learn all that you can and grow from it and help others? Father, we thank you so much for the time we've had to be together. Thank you so much for every man in this room who's preaching the gospel, those men who are elders, others who are serving faithfully in your kingdom who are here present today. We're so grateful that we are working together. for a common cause, toward a common goal. The sense of fellowship and togetherness that it brings us thrills the heart. We're so thankful for the opportunities that you place before each of us, realizing that each of us have unique opportunities that the other does not. Help us to be faithful in the place where you've planted us. Help us to do all that we can to help others go to heaven. In Jesus' name, amen.